It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wegebright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
Even after you've taken consideration the influence on crime of all those other factors I mentioned, the presence of payday lenders still has a statistically significant relationship with the level of crime in those neighborhoods.
Professor Gregory Squires, chair of the Department of Sociology at George Washington University, asks whether a concentration of payday lending leads to higher violent crime rates and provides his answer in part one of a two-part broadcast of a talk given on January 28, 2010 at the University of Richmond downtown. And you'll learn how military veterans can obtain free counseling and psychotherapy services to deal with problems such as post-traumatic stress disorder during this week's News You Can Use. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 78, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM Richmond Independent Radio and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's News You Can Use. For small property owners, housing discrimination is still legal in Virginia. Amy Nelson, Director of Systemic Investigations and Enforcement for the group Housing Opportunities Made Equal of Virginia, says property owners with three or fewer single-family homes are currently exempt from most of the anti-discrimination provisions of Virginia's fair housing laws. It still is technically legal for these property owners to discriminate against potential renters or buyers based on race, religion, national origin, gender, age, or having children or a disability. According to Nelson, somebody could say, "I'm not going to rent to you because you have kids, or because you're Hispanic, or because of your color," and they legally could do that in this exempt type of property. Nelson estimates that about 150,000 single-family residences in the Commonwealth are exempt from the fair housing laws. In her view, an anti-discrimination law should apply to all homeowners, and legislation has been proposed to end this exemption. In other news, the volunteer organization Give an Hour asks mental health professionals to set aside 1 hour a week to help military veterans and their families. Dr. Jim Fuller is a psychotherapist in Richmond and an ex-Marine who does just that. Fuller has been a volunteer for more than a year and is one of several therapists in Virginia who offer their services. Fuller says the program is important for vets and their families in dealing with issues such as post-traumatic stress disorder. He adds that, while the Veterans Administration does a good job, many returning vets hesitate to seek help there because they do not want to go on the record with mental health issues. According to Fuller, many veterans like to have some sort of counseling or psychotherapy service that's not connected with the military. Give an Hour says volunteers have delivered $1.7 million worth of free mental health services for military families. For more information, go to www.giveanhour.org. With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegebright. Turn me around, turn me around, turn me around. Ain't gonna let intolerance. On January 28, 2010, Professor Gregory Squires, chair of the Department of Sociology at George Washington University, spoke at the University of Richmond downtown about whether a concentration of payday lending leads to higher violent crime rates, and the Central Virginia Legal Aid radio show was there. Here's part one of this two-part talk.
George Squires is a professor of sociology and public policy and public administration at George Washington University. Currently, he's a member of the board of directors of the Woodstock Institute, the advisory board of the John Marshall Law School, Fair Housing Legal Support Center in Chicago, and the social science advisory board of the Poverty and Race Research Action Council in Washington, D.C. He has served as a consultant and expert witness for fair housing groups and civil rights organizations around the country, including HUD, the National Fair Housing Alliance, the National Community Reinvestment Coalition, and many others. He served a three-year term as a member of the Consumer Advisory Council of the Federal Reserve Board. He has written for several academic journals and general interest publications, including Social Problems, Social Science Quarterly, Urban Affairs Review, and the New York Times and the Washington Post. Prior to joining the faculty at George Washington, he taught at University of Wisconsin and served as a research analyst for the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights. Professor Squires?
Thank you all for inviting me and for coming. It's a pleasure to be in the state whose new governor may be the next president of the United States, unless Scott Brown can beat him out. I want to, you know, as you can see from the not very creative title, we're going to be talking a little bit about predatory lending. This is a phenomenon, of course, that goes back a long way. I'm not a scholar of this, but I understand that there was a lot about usury in the Bible, and I know pawn shops go back to the origins of our country. But there has obviously been an explosion of concern about predatory lending and usurious financial services practices in recent years. And what I want to do tonight is pick on two little pieces of the larger puzzle. I'm going to spend the first part of my time talking about some research I'm currently doing, looking at the role of payday lenders in increasing neighborhood crime rates. And then I'm going to shift gears a little bit and talk about how racial segregation generally has been a factor that has contributed to subprime lending. And in both cases, I'll have a few things to say about what I think some of the policy implications of this might be. Let me sort of set the mood or set the framework for this discussion. I have the lyrics of a rap song here, and I'm not going to perform this, but I would like to read them to you because I think it sort of sets the stage for everything that follows. And the title of this is Predators, and it reads, "If you can't maintain a certain amount, no banker's going to let you have a checking account. So when you got to cash a check because your kids need to eat, there's a check cashing place about a block up the street. When the money's tight, you don't have to wait. There's a 500% interest rate that you keep rolling over on that payday loan. And if you can't afford a freezer, you can rent to own. You got to make those payments, for you can't miss one. You can buy it three times over by the time that you're done. If you do miss a payment, they will repossess. And when your ice cream melts, it's going to make a mess. Because they're predators, predators. They keep devouring more and more. They're predators, predators that keep getting richer by preying on the poor." This song, the music and lyric were by Clifford J. Tasner and Will B. I must admit I'm not an aficionado of rap music. The names don't mean much to me, but it's from a wonderful documentary called In Debt We Trust, America Before the Bubble Bursts. As I said, I want to begin by talking a little bit about payday lending and how payday lending contributes to neighborhood crime. Payday lending has become big business in this country. This will shock all of you, I'm sure. But we now have more payday lenders than we have McDonald's restaurants. They do a huge loan volume annually. According to the Center for Responsible Lending, they currently charge $4.2 billion in excessive fees annually. These are fees above and beyond what could be justified by the risk posed by the borrowers. They've also reported that about 60% of loans today are to borrowers who have taken out 12 or more loans per year. As I think most of you know, that the payday lending industry advertises itself as offering a service that families will only occasionally make use of when they have that one-time emergency, and this is how they publicly advertise themselves, even though their business models clearly contradict that. And this research shows that, most of the loans, in fact, are going to repeat customers. Maybe we should be gratified that these are satisfied customers and they found a marketing plan that works. More interesting, I think, from my perspective, is that CRL has reported that 75% of the fees paid today by the borrowers are paying to cover the fees of previous loans that they've taken out. So it truly is a debt trap. Now, the research I'm going to be talking about here is work that I've done with a criminologist at George Washington University, Shar Skubrin, and a geographer at California State University at Northridge by the name of Stephen Graves. Some of you may know Stephen Graves. His research led directly to federal law that banned payday lending on military bases and to military families. But what we're looking at isn't so much what happens to borrowers. I think it's clearly understood by those who are willing to listen, and they say that none so blind as those who will not see. Or who was it who said that it's tough to teach a person a lesson that they're paid not to learn? We know that borrowers are in trouble when they walk into a payday lending store, but we think there are some broader community costs, one of which we hypothesized is that they contribute to neighborhood crime rates. Now, why would this be the case? We think there are public costs that are paid by people other than the customers, and we've done a case study of Seattle, Washington, to look at systematically the relationship between payday lending and crime. And there are a number of reasons why we think there could be such a relationship. I think the first obvious one is that the availability of cash in distressed neighborhoods during the evenings and weekends just makes them a target. In a slightly different context, some of you may recall Chris Rock doing a routine about ATMs being open 24 hours a day. And as I say at the bottom here, his line is, "Have you ever taken out $300 at 4 o'clock in the morning for something positive?" The question answers itself. We also think that today, with the growing economic problems, the job loss and related stresses that many people feel during hard economic times, this could entice, at the margins, some desperate people who will seek out unsuspecting victims. We think the concentration of payday lenders may constitute an unwitting advertisement that there is easy money to be made in these neighborhoods, and not just by the proprietors of the store. And we also suspect that payday lenders in neighborhoods can help lubricate a cash-only trade for drugs and other underground economic activity. Now, in our research that I'm about to show you, we don't really formally test any of these explanations, but we think there's a plausible reason to believe that there could be a connection, and we just want to know if this is the case. So it's a very simple kind of question that we're asking. Visually, when you look at the city of Seattle, there's an impression here, it sure looks like payday lending stores are concentrated in high crime neighborhoods, and this is what we wanted to explore. So formally speaking, I guess, the dependent variable in our model was the number of property and violent crimes per 1,000 residents for the years of 2006 and 2007. And our key independent variable is the number of payday lenders in 2005. So basically what we're saying is if you have lots of payday lenders, do you have more crimes in a neighborhood? And the census tract was our unit of analysis. And we didn't just look at a simple relationship between lending and crime. We tried to do what social scientists refer to as more statistical. We did a regression analysis. And we tried to take in consideration other factors that might account for crime and say, well, we know that these other factors that account for crime, but once we've accounted for them, is there an additional level of variation in neighborhood crime that might be accounted for by the independent variable that we're most interested in, which is the number of payday lenders in a neighborhood?
You're listening to a talk given on January 28, 2010, at the University of Richmond downtown by Professor Gregory Squires, Chair of the Department of Sociology at George Washington University, about whether a concentration of payday lending leads to higher violent crime rates. We'll be back in a moment.
Keep on a walking, keep on a talking, marching.
If you're just joining us, the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show now rejoins Professor Gregory Squires, Chair of the Department of Sociology at George Washington University, about whether a concentration of payday lending leads to higher violent crime rates in a talk given on January 28, 2010, at the University of Richmond downtown.
So we controlled on things like whether or not the store was in a central downtown business location. We controlled on the percentage of female-headed households in the tract. We controlled on the percentage of young males. We controlled on prior crime rates, because prior crime rates is usually a pretty strong predictor of subsequent crime rates. If there's a lot of crime in 1 year, it's likely to be a lot of crime in subsequent years. We wanted to take that, you know, remove that effect as well. We looked at residential instability as measured by the share of renters and the share of people who had moved in recent years. We developed a disadvantage index that looked at things like the unemployment level, the poverty level, the kind of job that people were in, the share of people that were in low-wage positions, the percent that were in managerial or professional jobs. We controlled on the percent black in the population, the percent who are high school graduates. So we took in consideration a fair number of variables. And we did a regression analysis, which I won't bother to explain. And this is the table that shows the effect of all of our variables. The major conclusion was that we found that indeed payday lenders in Seattle are concentrated in the same communities where violent crime, though not property crime, is highest. In other words, even after you've taken consideration the influence on crime of all those other factors I mentioned, the presence of payday lenders still has a statistically significant relationship with the level of crime in those neighborhoods. And one could argue, well, maybe the relationship works the other way around, that it's not that payday lending, you know, leads to crime, but payday lenders just go into neighborhoods where there are high crime rates. The reason why one of our control variables was prior crime was because we wanted to look at the relationship going both ways. So we found that our relationship could not be explained by the fact that crime might be an attraction to payday lenders. It's clear that where payday lenders move in and expand, crime rates go up. Now, why is this significant? A couple things occurred to us. What this suggests to us, again, is that this means it's not just the customers of payday lenders who are paying a price. This means that people who live in these neighborhoods or who operate businesses or who work for nonprofit organizations or their customers or their clients or their friends who visit are walking more dangerous streets as a result of the presence of payday lenders. Because these neighborhoods have higher crime rates, it means that the equity that homeowners gain from the homes that they own will be less, or maybe property values could even go down a little bit. It means these are probably areas where at the margins new businesses are less likely to move into. People may be a little more hesitant to invest and expand their businesses and therefore create jobs. If property values are going down and business revenues are going down, that means tax revenues are going down, which means that city officials who want to do the right thing have fewer dollars to hire teachers or police officers or firefighters or to provide other public services. So there are a range of public costs that can be attributed to the presence of payday lenders, again, above and beyond the costs or the prices that people pay who are the actual customers of these services. Now, there are a number of policy implications, we think, from this. There are a number of things that government officials at several levels could take on. We recommend that city and state governments reestablish what Stephen Graves has pointed out has been a traditional usury cap in the United States of 36% on all loans, payday loans and otherwise, as have 15 states and the District of Columbia. We think it makes sense to consider zoning laws that would limit the location and the density of payday lenders, as have 81 cities, 5 counties, and 19 states. The federal government has placed a cap on, or has prohibited payday lending in military bases. The federal government could place a 36% cap on all payday lending nationwide. Actually, I was talking to, I guess, Jay earlier today, and the thought occurred to me that the federal government could do this. But I guess it's also possible the federal government could pass a law that would preempt all state and local laws that did anything to try to protect consumers from payday lending. So I don't know to what extent we do want to energize the federal government. We see how eager they are to do financial services reform, and one wonders. At a minimum, it strikes us that law enforcement officials might consider stepping up activity in neighborhoods that are served by payday lenders, particularly those that are open late at night. And perhaps the most productive policy approach, at least from the long-term perspective, is to try to think in terms of alternative services to payday lenders. A number of cities and states have come together with nonprofit organizations, foundations, credit unions, and some lenders to offer small loans of $400 or $500 over a longer period of time, say 45, 50, 60 days, rather than the two-week loan, so that people can get their, you know, the loan that they need on, perhaps on a one-time basis, and not find themselves in a debt trap. I understand here in Richmond, recently has been the creation of the Good Choice program, which I think involves Goodwill Industries and a credit union and I think a local church. I'm sure there are people here that know this much better than I do. And they're focusing primarily on counseling for people so that I guess they can stay away from places like payday lenders, but they're also going to be making short-term loans available, I think, on a 45-day basis for people. And there are examples of this kind of thing popping up in the country. There's this payday lending listserv that some of you may be on, and I'm just struck almost every day, it seems, there's a message about another city or another state that has organized some combination of foundations or nonprofits or credit unions. There was one yesterday, San Francisco, where the mayor was proud to announce an initiative in San Francisco. So it's not just small towns, it's big cities and everything in between. And of course, there's important future research to be done. As an academic, it would be immoral for me to conclude any kind of presentation of anything without indicating what future research somebody should pay to have research academics do. One step would be additional case studies. We suspect Seattle is not unique. But we don't know that. And we also think it would be helpful to do longitudinal studies. Ours was really sort of a snapshot. I mean, we looked at payday lenders in 1 year, and we looked at the crimes in two subsequent years, but it would be interesting to trace this more systematically over a longer period of time to see where things go. I mentioned a number of community costs. It would be nice to quantify them, we're not prepared to do this right now, but there are econometricians that could take our data, and if we had time, we could take our data to actually quantify to what extent property values go up or down by a given percentage with the presence of each additional payday lender. And we could look, therefore, at the impact on tax revenues. We could actually quantify the number of tax dollars a given municipality loses with the presence of each payday lender. This is not something we've done, but it's certainly a next step that ought to be done. And perhaps more interesting, if not more useful, is to look at what's referred to as the multiplier leakage problem. In other words, payday lenders generate capital. I mean, they do generate profits. My guess is the owners of most payday lenders don't live in the neighborhoods where their stores are, which means that this money is going out of these neighborhoods. These are not vehicles of reinvestment. These are vehicles of disinvestment. They are taking money out of communities. And I know I'm going to sound like a broken record, but again, they're not just taking money out of the pockets of people who borrow from them. It's draining capital from communities generally. I guess my final word on the payday lending, and I'd like to read you from the final paragraph of our paper, and again, we do have a paper that's circulating that I'd be glad to send anybody, in which we argue that access to a wide range of financial services on fair and equitable terms has become a major public policy issue and the topic of much social science research in recent years. Payday lenders constitute part of the growing web of fringe bankers that have been concentrated in low-income and disproportionately minority communities, though they have begun to expand into working and middle-class communities as well. The cost to many individual borrowers and families has long been evident, often quantified with some precision. While not understood with the same level of specificity, the broader neighborhood costs are becoming recognized as facts of life in the nation's metropolitan regions. The link between payday lending and neighborhood crime should, in fact, come as no surprise. How we choose to respond to that connection, if we choose to respond at all, remains to be determined.
You've been listening to part one of a two-part talk given on January 28, 2010 at the University of Richmond downtown by Professor Gregory Squires, chair of the Department of Sociology at George Washington University, about whether a concentration of payday lending leads to higher violent crime rates. This is the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. If you have any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. In addition, every first-run Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio show ever broadcast is now available at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the numeral 4, all.net. Then click the contributor link, then click Marty Wegebright, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. Does a concentration of subprime loans lead to higher racial housing segregation? Join us next week when Professor Gregory Squires, chair of the Department of Sociology at George Washington University, answers this question in part two of a two-part broadcast of a talk given on January 28, 2010 at the University of Richmond downtown. That's Law for the Rest of Us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegebright.